Well, let's head to Nepal, or at least take a look at the situation in Nepal. At least 68 people have died after a Yeti Airlines aircraft crashed in Pokhara in central Nepal in the small country's worst aviation disaster in three decades. Let's get more on this crash at the moment, and of course, early days, but we're joined now by retired A380 Captain James Nixon. What do we know so far about what might have caused the crash?
It's all very fluid, but at least 68 people have died, including five Indians, four Russians, and two South Koreans, as well as the Australian. One of the Russians was renowned travel blogger Elena Bandero, that many people in the blogging world know about. And as you say, it's the worst crash in Nepal for the last three decades. The weather was clear, and the pilots had made contact with the tower as they approached the airport at 10:50 in the morning. And we've got some amazing footage taken by someone on the ground, shows the aircraft on approach, flying slowly in a nose-high attitude. The left wing rapidly drops, indicating a stall. And a stall means that the airflow over the wing is too slow, and the lift stops working and the plane falls down, usually because one wing stops working before the other. The aircraft rolls and the nose drops, and that happens really fast. In this case, we have footage from inside the aircraft from a survivor's phone. It took only 6 seconds to crash from being a normal approach to being flames in the gully. And the fix for approaching a stall in this condition is the pilots just have to rapidly apply power, which increases airflow over the wing. Now, the ATR turboprop, which is the type that crashed, means that it has a small jet engine driving propeller blades. And a lot of people think, oh, propeller blades are old-fashioned, but these are really good because the blades twist when you need emergency power, which is why they use these planes around the mountains, because the turboprops pretty much give you instant power when you need it, unlike the big jet engines, which take about 3 seconds for the engines to spool up. And this guy is one of the country's most experienced pilots, and so it's unlikely that he would have been caught out by a failing engine and not be able to react fast enough. So one of the other problems of this area is the mountainous winds that are rapidly changing, and the investigators will be gathering all the information about the winds at the time.
Because, James, I imagine, just stopping you there, but just quickly, I imagine Nepal, just on what you just said, would be a very unique place to fly, would it not, given the mountainous environment, the wind, the altitude, all of that sort of thing?
Sure, and there are airports where you have to be, and Kathmandu is one of these, you have to be specially qualified on that airport to go in and out of there. So I flew for 31 years, and including, you know, 10 years flying for a big company in the Middle East, but I wasn't good enough to fly in there. So you have to do really special training to fly in and out of these tricky airports because of these winds that just move around all the time. And planes like to land into the wind as much as possible. So crosswinds and tailwinds can be a real problem. And a real fast tailwind can really get you in trouble. The worst, another part about this is it crashed into a gorge right next to within a heavily populated area. So for a start, trying to get the fire out was really difficult for them. But now trying to retrieve the debris and the black boxes,
that was is going to be tricky. Because that terrain, I mean, investigations were now being told, because when I said late last night, obviously I'm at Australia time, but as you said, it was in the day in Nepal. But in investigations to resume later this morning, Nepal time, that's going to be a challenge, I imagine, because it sort of crashed into a gorge, didn't it? Very, very rough terrain.
Yeah, very rough. But it's completely populated. So we're talking about a gorge within a very, very busy town. It's the second biggest city in Nepal. Mm. So, you know, there's hundreds, there are thousands of people. And, of course, everyone wants a piece of the debris. Everyone wants to help. So it's really just amazing that trying to get all this stuff back again. And, of course, that's the hard part for the police and for the investigators, is try and get the black boxes to find out why this most senior captain allowed the speed to decay on the approach and for the wing to stall. Because when you stall an aircraft, it's no longer an aircraft. It's like a grand piano being dropped out of a tall building.
No, well, as you said, only six seconds was it to drop down as well. Given those challenges, the terrain, and as you said, you need special training to even fly in that airspace, it's worth noting this is said to be Nepal's worst air disaster in three decades. Am I right in saying this is fairly unusual in Nepal, despite those challenging conditions?
Yeah. Well, we say worst because it's the largest number of deaths.
Death toll,
But, you know, they have these small aeroplanes that go from village to village. And those small aeroplanes quite often crash. So, you know, I think the last one was about 12 people or 10 people in a small plane flying around. And they're usually tourists, adventure tourists, wanting to go to these tricky locations. And as more recently, tourists who've got money and they want to go on a certain day. So a lot of these areas where the weather's so changeable, you just go there and they just say, sorry, we're not flying today. So there's a lot of pressure on these operators to get people to where they're going, and these small charter operators. So that's why a lot of those countries have problems like this. Like New Guinea's got the same sort of issues with big mountains, small airports, tiny airplanes.
And I do note, just reading about this morning, the European Union's actually banned Nepali Airlines from its airspace for quite some time now, 10 years, since 2013, it says, due to safety concerns. Have we seen improvements in the country's aviation industry over the years? Because I understand there was talk a little while ago that ban was going to be lifted.
Yeah, well, it's the same sort of thing that happened with Yemeni Airlines and a few other airlines as well, is that the EU really requires high standards and things like English language testing for their pilots. If you don't tick that box, you're not coming in. So they can operate, a lot of these airlines operate very good in their home turf. You know, they're really tight operators, but they've got one old 737 that they wanted to take to London that hasn't been serviced very often. Well, they just don't get a chance at that. But doing what they're doing best, which is flying small airplanes around mountainous conditions, a lot of them are better than the other carriers, you know. So if you stick to your knitting, that's what you're good at. But the EU is very, very strict on these airlines operating within their airspace.
Is there anything to, just while we've got you there, a lot's been said this morning about the fact that the airport itself, as in the destination airport, was very new. I think it had been operating for a very short period of time. It was brand new. Is there anything to read into that? I don't know, in terms of, communications or being warned about the conditions or anything like that at all, or is that completely coincidental?
Well, no, not really, because we've had this before in Spain and also in Catania and also in Sicily. Airports that you put on the side of a mountain or that you put next to the sea underneath a mountain, suddenly you realise after you've built them that they have winds from different angles make the thing almost unusable. And certainly in Palermo, there's angles from, if the wind's coming from certain angles, you just cannot fly in there. So sadly, the reason we find out that those winds are bad from certain angles is because of a crash. So this is what investigators will be looking at, because it's just so rare to, one, have a plane crash in clear conditions like this, and two, to have a video from inside and outside showing it stalling on approach. It's just really rare to see that.
James Nixon there, retired A380 captain.